That's it.
And I say white because most of the power is in the hands of white people. It's just how it is. At our uni the other day, we honoured Doreen Lawrence. She got a Doctor of Letters. And on the VC's office, the Vice Chancellor's office, and everyone on the stage, there was one Asian guy and Doreen Lawrence as a black woman. That was it. But they're talking about representation and blah, blah, blah. There were about 22 people on the stage. One Asian man. I counted 5 white women. All the rest were white, middle class men. What you'd expect. That needs to change.
Well, if I can come in as a white middle class man living in Lewisham, I think we've also got to acknowledge, and Sid, by the way, around the corner, that we're also co-opted and abused by the system.
Oh, absolutely.
That's not setting us up to be a victim, but we live in something that the Home Secretary, Theresa May, when she was, designed as what is called a hostile environment for migration. And that denatures
us all. Well, I don't know if she designed it. I think she inherited it.
And she still perpetuates that. So when we make our doctors, our schools, our neighbours, our landlords into immigration officers, it forces everybody into suspicion, it causes difference, and it actually makes us all victims of that. But not to excuse anybody on the basis of their colour, it's just to accept that what's happening is being done to all of us as a means of dividing and ruling. And that's not about Brexit either. Brexit is simply a symptom of that. If you look around Europe, this is happening all over the place, in Hungary, in Poland, where there are mass demonstrations, where people are being constitutionally split on grounds of race and religion right now. So I think I just wanted to throw that into the conversation.
I think this, the thing that I was talking about, I really literally could have talked about my poem on its own for about 10 minutes without sharing the poem. But this concept of context, there are phrases, when this conversation of the fact that we hadn't discussed peace came up, probably the most times I would have heard the word peace in a day would have been on various demonstrations that I've been on, where the phrase no justice, no peace has been repeated and repeated and repeated. And these phrases were, you know, the huge demonstration that happened after the New Cross fire was probably the first time that a mass of black British people, people living in this country who are of African ancestry and Asian ancestry, actually, there were a lot of people that were, you know, got together and these concepts were first vocalized by the masses on our streets, as a result of events that occurred in Lewisham. When we came to celebrate these events, it was the first time that I'd sort of looked back through some of my writing that I'd written about events that have happened and kind of realized I'd kind of spent my life wishing that I'd lived through a time of a really interesting political and historical time. I thought, you know, the French Revolution would have been incredible, or the fall of the Berlin Wall. And I kind of looked back and I realised that with the Battle of Lewisham, with the New Cross fire, with the story of Stephen Lawrence, although his murder didn't take place within the borough, his family are, you know, he and his family are from Lewisham. And there is a thread. There's a thread running through this borough's history, which is a combination of assault and response. And the response is what, you know, I think what we were celebrating here was that it had brought people together. When you see the pictures that those police officers were concerned about at Lewisham People's Day, there are inarguable things going on. The faces that you can see, the moments of joy and celebration amongst people that were protesting, the moments of anger, fear and desperation, all of those things were brought together. And Lewisham is a place that has somehow I don't know whether the Battle of Lewisham to some extent is actually, you know, whether these things actually spring, whether it was a seed from which these things have sprung. I do think that the Battle of Lewisham and the New Cross Fire and the way that people responded to the New Cross Fire, I don't think if the Battle of Lewisham hadn't happened, I don't think the response to the New Cross Fire would have been the same. The fact that the moonshot was there, the fact that there's been that people were aware that you could get together and march on the streets of London, that you could get your voices heard, even if usually the way that they're represented by the mass media is to totally twist whatever it is that you say. I think there is a seed here which I don't see many things, certainly within our borough, that precede it. This is a starting point for a journey that I'd hope we were still travelling and hope that would lead to somewhere better than where we've come from. But yeah,
I think that maybe it's because you were four.
Absolutely.
You were five. But I think the seminal moment for me in let's say the black politics of Lewisham Borough was Mavis Best, Stop Suss. Because she conscientised a lot of us. We used to go to the youth clubs and listen to her. So I think that is probably what gets overlooked. I think that was about 1976, was it? 76, 70, something like that. Because I don't think I was 20 then. Mm-hmm. But Mavis Best used to come mm-hmm. to the clubs and she used to say to us, you know, what's happened to you, blah, 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 what's happened to you on the street? And she's the one who got, like, the Labour MP, I can't remember his name, on board, and she got Suss scrapped. Because when you were talking about mugging, mugging actually comes from the theatre. You'd mug the crowd off. That's where mugging comes from. Nothing to do with street crime. Comes out of theatre. But they used that notion of mugging to it's a bit like, when people get upset, it's a bit like homophobia. Homo, for an anthropologist like myself, half anthropologist I suppose I am, homo is man all the same. Phobia is fear. But you find a word that scares people into either action or inaction. And that's what mugging does. You think of mugging, you think of people robbing old ladies, dragging them around the streets, blah, blah, blah. But that wasn't what the term meant. But the term was already in the consciousness and the psyche of a lot of the people already. So to change it into something else happened. So when Mavis Best, and I can't remember some of the other people who worked with her, I can't remember the names at the moment.
Is she still around?
Yeah.
Yeah, she is. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we commemorated her in 2011. Mm. We commemorated Mavis well. Best, Sybil Phoenix, mm. Gus John, mm. some of those people who were there around that seminal time. Mm. That nurse, what's her name? From Lewisham,
yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
I do, but
we did one for her as well.
Name.
The names are going, maybe it's old age. But basically, the point is, and this was what I was trying to convey in my talk, and that is, this stuff didn't come out of a vacuum. Mm. Places like Moonshot were not just places we went and played table tennis or whatever. We were being, one, educated, or let's call it re-educated, by being introduced to black studies that started from ancient Egypt. That's why I learned that the pharaohs and all them were Africans from 1972 in Moonshot. So we were being conscientized, but we were also reasoning, because Rastafari was probably, for me, the key influence on us. Firstly, locating ourselves as Africans in a proud way, and second, understanding what it means to reason through your situation. That's what groundation is, or grunation, or whatever you want to call it. So, in the first instance, you might say, yes, the enemy are the police, or the enemies are white people, or racists, or whatever. But then what you understand is, you start to reason through it, and you will reason with people who have a similar, let's say, political outlook. So if we say that came to a... That was highlighted at the Battle of Lewisham, because, as was suggested about the visibility of black youth then, but it doesn't mean that we weren't politically active. Mm-hmm. This is the point mm-hmm. I'm trying yeah. to make. Mm-hmm. We were doing mm-hmm. stuff in our own way, affecting the kind of changes we did. Yeah. In my own writings, sorry, just to but the last bit, in my own writings, I spoke about working for James and Charles Dodd solicitors who were in Blackheath. They might still be there, Tranquil Vale, opposite Blackheath Station, more or less. I worked for them at 16. To go uptown, dressed in my suit, with my shirt and tie, I had to have a letter. Because the police would nick us all the time. And if you speak to black boys who worked uptown, anywhere uptown, going to the law courts, anywhere, once you cross that bridge, Waterloo Bridge, they will tell you they used to have letters. Junior Giscombe, one of the most famous singers from the UK, Mama used to say, I know him from when I was 16. We used to compare our letters because he worked uptown. This is true. It was like apartheid. And you had the letter because you knew you were going to get nicked. You would end up in West End Central. So you had the letter, basically, and mine was a letter debater. Yes, William is here on official business, blah, blah, blah. And that is a part of that history. And we were already organising. So if we didn't have a letter, we would say to them, you better get a letter, otherwise you're going to keep getting nicked. So I just don't want people to think we're kind of like apathetic and just the recipients of this stuff. Because we weren't past.
Can we just take Sophia's question
about how to get engage young people and how to share what went on?
I'll talk about that, but I was also going to say in the historical, social, historical, political context, there was much wider things, because we're talking about the 60s when you had the Enoch Powell speech, the Rivers of Blood speech, and there was a whole thing about Ugandan Asians being sent over here, and there was loads of increase of racism. There was, at the time when I was getting active, SAS was a very big thing, but also there was National Front, there was police brutality we talked about Grunwicks, which is a recognition for union rights for Asian women, which was amazing. Yeah. It was a big thing at the time.
Yeah.
And so, and also within Lewisham, we've got a big anti-apartheid activism. And yeah. That was a thing. I'm South African, so I know that a lot of people turned up to the demonstration with South African activists who knows what apartheid does and how divide and rule works. And we all got involved in the demonstration, not just to peaceful demos, but also to stop them, because we know that they want to divide and rule us. And we're seen as black as in a wider context, not just segregated us, because they want to divide and rule. And that's how I think we had about 20 or 30 people just from Breakspear's Road House, the anti-apartheid house, which is, again, hidden from history. And they were all active in the Battle of Lewisham and have continued in their own walks of life in the other areas, whether it's in South Africa struggles or here, to change Britain, to make it more fairer. So, yeah, we've got to look at that context. So, and I think my worry is that the younger generations were mobilised at the time. And the black youth were joined in as well as the white youth. And because there was a lot more than just colour thing, there was a class issue that came through as well. But over the years, it's been hidden and forgotten in some way. People still experience all the stuff in their communities, but the activism is gone. And we need to. We lost funding from the local GLC, used to fund lots of anti-racist stuff.
Yeah,
all those things have been battle attacking us. So, you know, we have to get back together again. And now more than ever, even though we had racism before, as you said, before Brexit, it's just got worse, it's become normalised.
Mm.
And our words in the media, it's okay to talk about these things. These are things we've got to kind of attack.
Yeah.
I'm from BAME, which is a Lewisham Labour Party, a Black Ethnic Minority Forum. And officer, we want to get people engaged because we realise that youngsters are not registering, and they're not using the vote. Some of them are, but not a lot of them are, because they're not engaged with the society. They can't see what it will do for us. We've got to make it without our involvement, nothing's going to change. And you know, we get involved in the streets. People are being killed. People are being imprisoned.
Mm.
And all those all areas we can get involved in the local community. And given the fact that NHS is run by majority of black ethnic minority workers.
Yeah.
We really, the stuff that we were, the campaign in Lewisham, it worked really well to support that. So that's one way we can engage together, but also I think what you said was very important.
I was going to say something as well, because the word mugger became a euphemism for a black man.
Absolutely.
And his son had it, pictures, file pictures, I can still see it in my head.
Yeah.
And today the word terrorist is a euphemism for a Muslim.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And the tactics haven't changed. I worked with Ugandan Asian refugees when they were kicked out, and the front pages of the Sun was 5-star hotels, these people coming, taking our homes. Oh, yeah. God, nothing has changed there either. And in some senses, people say we had multiculturalism, and Battle of Lewisham did break the National Front, but of course it led to the BNP and all the rest of it.
Yeah,
but I'm in LARAG, Lewisham Anti-Racist Action Group, and we've been active for years.
Mm.
And we have lots of people on our database, of four of us doing anything. And the changes just in Lewisham. So now, after Lee Rigby's murder, we were going to have a community festival, and I was leafleting Lewisham Market with some Goldsmith students, white students. And one of the market storeholder came to me, was very rude, tore it up. So I went by his stall and continued giving out the leaflets. They called me fucking cunt, socialist, you should be gassed. The woman joined in, they filmed me because they were EDL. I actually recognised that three of them were done for beating up Muslim. They were at the EDL.
What age group were they?
These are old
workers.
These are stall
holders. No, but roughly what age?
These are in their 40s and 50s, 40s. Yeah. These are stall holders. Giving out leaflets outside Lewisham Council, I had pensioners calling me a cunt as well, and openly, which didn't happen before. So there is a change where people are confident. This is before Brexit.
Well, it did happen before. Sorry to cut you. The reason why I asked you the age is because the National Front, and I mentioned this, I think, the first time I met John, National Front used to give out Bulldog magazine. Yeah. They would sell it to white people.
They used to come every week.
But that's what I'm saying, at Lewisham Market. Yeah. They used to be by the clock tower.
And so I know people who were beaten up. I know teachers who went to anti-racist, white people who got beaten up and had their legs broken and arm broken when they'd gone to anti-racist meetings. They'd come with bricks in their handbags and hit people on the head.
Yeah.
But then I did a stall at... One of the things we do in Larrack is... the National Front, by the way, still put up a candidate every election in Downham. So we go wherever at National Fund or BNP are standing, and we try to, you know, just work around that. So I did a stall in Eltham by the police station. It had something about BNP being fascist, but it was a windy day. And a white family came over to the stall, big family, two big guys and mother and father. And they said, I didn't know you were doing a stall today. I didn't realise that was a BNP pitch that we were in. And they were there every week. And it was their space. There was a black guy, an elderly guy, who happened to be sitting on a bench, and he said something about his right to be here, and they started beating him up. Mm-hmm. So we tried to stop it. It was really hard. Police came out. The family went away. What did they do? They arrested the black guy. And we told them the family are down there. They said to us, you're very brave coming here. You know. So that hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. Lots of things have not changed. And I'm now in the Labour Party, and I'm shocked that if he's gone back to the 70s, they don't do ethnic monitoring. They don't do basic 80% of BAME vote for Labour. And actually the highest proportion of young people who voted were Muslims. But we're not represented at every level of the party. There's a long way to go in all our institutions. And there's a lot of rhetoric.
Yeah.
My fear, as I agree with you, the fear of the rise of the far right across across the world. And then I was saying earlier on about Barbuda, a land given to free slaves. The land belongs to the people. And disaster capitalism, they want now, because of the hurricane, they want to privatise the land and sell it off. And that is happening now. That colonialism, that imperialism, it hasn't changed. Land grab in Africa now is as big as it was in the 1880s. Speculators are not just buying land in London. They're buying land in Africa. Mm. They're displacing people who, 90 million people depend on the land for food, self-sufficiency, are being displaced and are leaving the land empty for speculation. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's happening in Africa. The land grab, the resource grab, the wars, and that's just not, we don't see that recorded anywhere. And young people here do not know and do not. There's a lot of disengagement, and we need to look at how we can change that. Mm. And it's not about just black, it's all of us, education of our histories.
Again, this thing about, I keep coming back to context, because, I mean, my mum, all 5'3", white woman, was part of the anti-Nazi League as a result of going, she was at the Battle of Lewisham, not part of anything, became part of Rook Against Racism and ended up in the anti-Nazi League. And they used to go to Brick Lane on a Sunday and fight with the fascists. They would literally, physically, have confrontations with groups of fascist newspaper sellers and people that were trying to attack Asian and black people in Brick Lane. The fact that we're having the behaviours that you're talking about is coming out doesn't surprise me, because my mum's in a early 60s, the people that she was fighting with them were, a lot of them were even younger than she was, and they are the parents of another generation. I was a youth worker in Eltham and in Greenwich, and worked with one of the families of one of the people who wasn't convicted of Stephen Lawrence's murder, but was definitely part of that whole thing. I've worked with, and Their families loved me. They didn't have any problem with me. I was all right.
Them. But you're all right with them.
But there's always another group. Now, for some people, I would be the red rag, because some people, it's all of their big issue is racial intermixing. Mm. For them, I'm more of a problem than people. You know, they when people have talked about anti-Semitism and they talk about the things that happened in Germany and how people on the far right were connected with people who with Zionists, and that there was a connection because. It's people who want to be separate will have more of an issue with me than they would with other people who also think that they should be separate. There are divergent sets of thinking. For some people, a person who of mixed heritage is more of an affront, more of an offence. For some people, it's the person of darker skin is more of an affront. Some situations I am privileged and people will treat me with more respect, and in some situations it's absolutely the reverse. But it is all about context. The fact that these people are the parents of another generation, they didn't go in, they stopped marching through Lewisham, but they didn't leave Lewisham. They didn't leave, you know, if you see Nicole's film, which I'd done a lot of research into the film that's available, you will see that there are, you know, on the original demonstration there are banners from different places that these people came from. They quite often talk about the left having bussed people in. They ignore that obviously the right had bussed all these people in. They couldn't have found that many people, you know, to stand up in Lewisham who had exactly the same views and were prepared to demonstrate in that way. But these things they ebb and flow, and they're either more accepted or less accepted. And in America with Trump, and in this country with Brexit, we're going through a period where those people that have the extreme end of the spectrum, and it is a spectrum. There are some people who just, I don't like the fact that it's harder to get housing because there are people from other countries. You know, I mean, there's another debate going on out there about housing at the moment, and that's an interesting one. There are some people that's their thing. Some people think, oh, the NHS is in trouble because there are economic migrants coming over here and health tourism. I mean, admittedly, most of these narratives are spread by the media, and deliberately, I would suggest, to kind of divide and separate us. But this context of the ebb and flow of these ideas, they are constant. They are always an undercurrent, and people weren't saying the thing.
I was just thinking, your film sounds fascinating. So how would it be possible to get your film into mainstream education? That would be so brilliant for teachers to have it as a resource.
I've spoken with a few people at like Lewisham Council briefly, kind of about like obviously like trying to get it done here first. It would kind of make the most sense. I've had issues with people wanting to censor it, so like when you see the film, that would be interesting. So that's one thing as well.
Why have they wanted to censor it?
Because of some of the language used, apparently. So that's been a response. I have
what
been
PSAT? Swearing in schools.
No, there's no swearing in.
Has anybody said anything that they specifically objected to?
They just said that it could be offensive language.
Was it racist language?
Yeah, racist language. That has been one thing.
Is it showing today?
Yeah, yes. It's showing today. Yes. It's 45. Yeah. So at the moment, it's like really, it's really private, because I have thought about like trying to contact people to broadcast it, which is also another struggle. If I have it to publicise at the moment, then that could prevent that from happening. So, I've gone into a few schools and shown it there.
Okay, I mean, there's one film called My Beautiful Laundrette that some of you may have seen. Do you know?
They mention it back in the room.
Okay, so, you know, maybe you could, I don't know, package it in something like that, you know, or maybe put it on YouTube.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, like, at the moment, put it in the public sphere, like, just if you want it to go to broadcast, you can't really do that for the everyone's already seen it, so like if you've got something that's like Channel 4, for example, if everyone's already seen it on YouTube, they're not going to stick it on Channel 4.
Okay.
So But I'm trying to just show it like locally. I send it around to anyone who emails me. I'll send a link to.
Just to say, we are trying at the moment. So, one of the things that really came out from the anniversary weekend was this need to get this. To get the wider story of the Battle of Lewisham out into particularly schools. So we've created on our web space, we've created a separate page for educational resources, and we're working with our education department at the moment to try and put together teaching packs. So that will have images, texts, primary source documents, questions, the wider context, and then you'll be able to download that, you know, and that will be key staged packs. So if you're Key Stage 1, Key Stage 2, you'll be able to download the pack and pick and choose from what you want, and teachers will be able to take that in. As part of the... So we've just put in a proposal for a new MA programme in Black British History at Goldsmiths, which we're hoping to launch in 2018, if not 2019. And although that is an MA programme, we're talking to... We don't have a secondary PGCE history teacher training block at Goldsmiths. We have a secondary PGCE programme, but it doesn't have history on it. And we're talking at the moment about whether, A, we can partner with the education department to have a secondary PGCE, but also the potential of actually having the secondary PGCE history teacher training core as actually a Black British History teacher training core. And making that, then feeding that down from the MA. So that's another thing we're talking to them about, and getting this material out into schools, and just trying to... And the other thing that happened recently was the launch of the Young Historians Project, which was launched at Goldsmiths. And this is Project Hakim Adi down at Chichester. Got some HLF money, quite a few years ago now, 3 or 4 years ago, I think. At least 2 years ago. And the idea of this is that you take people between 16 and 25 who are interested in history, who may be undergraduate historians, sixth form graduates, and they are predominantly... Yeah, the idea was that it was young Black people coming out of those arenas. But it doesn't have to be. I mean, most of the project is. But the idea was that it was about creating a Black history project, and then taking that project, those young people going back into schools, and they've got an exhibition, and they made a film. And the whole remit of the Young Historians Project came out of a conference 2 years ago, when the closing point of that conference was, you know, the whole conference was about, as you say, the lack of the Black community in teaching, at every level, right the way up. I mean, I think Hakim is the only Black history professor in Britain. You know, professor of history, he's the only Black professor of history in Britain. And I mean, you know, it's and so the conference closed on this kind of how do we change this? How do we? And what we're hearing from the Young Historians Project, it was one of the most uplifting things I've been to in a long time, to sit in the audience and hear these young people on stage articulating why history was so important as a historian. It was really warmed me, you know. And they were saying, it's our history. We need to take ownership of it. It needs to be coming from us, because we need to understand it. And one of these poor girls, she said, she was 17 or something, she said, I considered myself to be a feminist activist, a Black activist, you know, a race activist. I considered myself to be really politically astute, and I didn't know anything about the Black Liberation Front in Britain. She said, and I was ashamed about that. And I remember shouting from the audience, weren't they? You don't need to be ashamed, yeah, it's fine. And she would say, no, but it's true. I just felt, how could I not know about this? And now I do, and I feel so empowered. And I just thought, that's, you need to bottle that. You know, that drive, that determination. And it was about, and that, once that, you need to feed that in. You need to feed that in at every level. And I think it is about history. People engage with history when they can associate with it, when they can feel that it speaks to them, and this sort of black and white history that's been, I don't know, it doesn't speak to them. They don't see people that they recognise in the historical record. And this, you know, Lewisham, we're talking about the long, read Jones' book, you know, if you ever read Jones, The Longest Journey, Jones situates, you know, Lewisham today, the docks, the immigration, but the reason why there was this black presence in Deptford and Lewisham, from the docks, from the black Tudors right the way back, all the new work that's being done on that, and we're at the centre of that. Those dockyards were at the centre of that, which is why there's been this black presence in this area for so long. But the young kids in this area don't know that, and the more they know that, the more they'll recognise that history is there, that history includes them. They're part of history, and then they'll get inspired by it. They'll come to love it, and they'll feed it on.
Because I just wanted to kind of speak about maybe like what Sophie was kind of mentioning about like trying to get the younger generation involved, and I just think systematically in so many different ways that like, young people are oppressed from almost like reaching those kind of levels of almost being mature enough to understand these levels. So like for example in institutions that lead, just coming from like my experience, like wanting to go into television, it's an older generation. That's obviously a lot to do with the fact that it's a journey that like, you do have to go along. But however, they want to engage with young people, however they don't have any young people present. So like for example, a lot of the content that for example is trending, that like, trending media like trying to engage with young people at the moment is like all about like trending and things like that, and the things that are trending the most and are engaging with young people the most are made by young people. So that's kind of the issue, and when you see a lack of representation, like young people just don't go near it. That's not for us, that's for the older people. So like the demographic needs to be changed, and we need to be allowed that trust to be able to say that actually give her the opportunity to actually grow into this position, let me teach and pass on what I know to that person, and then shape them into the understanding. I think that's the issue, and the lack of representation, because going to university, doing my undergraduate at Reading, and then doing my master's at Goldsmiths, I've never had a black lecturer or a person of colour be a lecturer, never. I was the only black person in my master's course out of 16 people, and they told me that was diverse because they had people that came from like say Switzerland, Germany, and do you get what I mean? I was the only black person on my course out of 16 people, and out of the whole master's, which is 60, is it 50 or 60 people? There's five of us, so that's still one hand that were counting. So those things. So when you say, the question always comes to whether people of colour or young people, they never apply, they don't apply, they don't come to these things, so they're not interested. And that's kind of the excuse, and it's like, is that based on the fact there's no representation to reach that?
I think what you're saying is interesting, especially going back to your comment about the middle class, which I really sympathise with, because a lot of working class people don't have a voice, but you know that they're absorbing everything that's going on, and it's just not particularly defined in the way they express themselves, although it wants to be. So in countries like, say, Sweden, you might find more black people in higher faculty because they're very good about absorbing immigrants into the education system there. And so, I mean, I always think with middle class people, there's a real strong facility for revolution. I know that obviously they've got a lot of the means of production, and it's annoying, classically, to take control of that. That's what happens in a revolution. But many of them want to give that means of production to black people so that your situation, becomes empowered.
Are you saying that the middle class almost want to like give back to, or like try and help based on their resources?
Yes, I think they do.
But then that's all well and good. But if you want to almost like see yourself in that position, sometimes you need to be given that by the same person. You need to be able to say, oh, so and so is in that position. They look like me. They've come from the same space as me, and they can give me that handout. Because then we get into a tick boxing system where, for example, we're bringing in people just because actually we need three or four black people and an Asian person and hijabi just to kind of make this a bit better, because we don't want to be seen by the public as.
Are you in tokenism?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about on a very large scale.
Really going to be, because I was in a situation where I worked for the BBC, and I know exactly what you mean. I mean, at the end of the day, I just kind of felt that, I was there because I ticked a certain box. But it's. I've heard Les speak before, and we interviewed him for a film, and there's one thing that he says, and it's just like, no one is going to give up their power just like that. And, that's the hard thing. How do we get the people who have the power to share?
Mm.
And if anybody is prepared to give up their power, then they won't have power for very long in order to be able to share it. If anybody who's prepared to give away power that easily isn't going to stay in a position of power. The people who end up with the most power are those people who are happy to hold it. I mean, it's... It,
also, it reminds me about young people, because I was a parent and at a water school, and we started doing Black History Month. There's two parents, and I mean, increase the group to get more Black parents involved. But doing Black History Month, which actually engaged me, like Raquel was in the part of the school thing too, and it made an impact on a lot of the Black working class kids as well, who never saw that history, and then gave them a platform, because they were poets, so they created poetry, they had 150 people, they had a platform to actually read out their poems about Black history, whatever was important to them. So it's quite good to start young, when we were trying to not just have it once a month, but we were trying to integrate it into the system, so like getting the resources, books, or trying to get the Black teachers and the Black youngsters involved, as well as whites. But it worked well, I think. We did for about 10 years. So there's been a kind of a growth. I'd like to see how the impact has on people like Karen and all the other people in her generation, because they were also exposed to that, which they weren't before. Giving them confidence, which is not formal history, it's like history in the school, but also trying to bring their own lives and experience into the
mix. My other half's a year 3 primary school teacher in Thornton Heath, and, you know, the school is 90-95%, you know, sort of Black, Asian, you name it, Thornton Heath. And she kept coming back to me and saying, we're doing Black History Month or Black History Week.
Mm. Yeah.
And she said, you know, I get really frustrated because every year it's the same. They were doing, so they have to do a week-long kind of different tasks to build for Black History Week. And it was, you know, all the people they were looking at. So they looked at Martin Luther King. Hey, it's fair enough, you know, Martin Luther King. They looked at Serena Williams. They looked at Barack Obama. She was like, where's the people that these kids are going to... So she said to me, I want to change this. We've got a meeting. This was back in February time. We've got a meeting next week about how we should do this. Who can I take to the table? So I went to the bookcase and got all these books off. And we sat and we worked out who she could take. And she went to this planning meeting and she said, why don't we do these people this year instead? And we did. We put forward J.Deb Desai from Grumwick. So we had, you know, we sort of put her forward. We put forward... who else we put forward? Darcus Howell, because he's not long died. And it was mostly... She said, this is really weird, because everybody you're putting forward are activists. They're always all people who didn't have power and were fighting for power. Where are all the... Yeah, where are the Barack Obamas? Where are the... And I was like, well... But the point was, she went, she did it, and they fed those characters in, and the kids absolutely loved it. And one of the reasons they loved it was because some of the kids were saying, I went home and I said to my parents that we were studying Darkest Hell. And they said, oh, I know Darkest Hell. And they told me their stories about Darkest Hell. Yeah. And the kids were bringing stories back in, and you think... And they weren't doing that with Barack Obama, because, funnily enough, you know, or Serena Williams. And you just think... And that's a tiny little change in one school, but if a school like hers in Thornton Heath aren't doing it, then, you know, what about schools in, I don't know, other areas?
And these pictures, they do build up, you know, just as much as that activist, as that young person that you had at the young historians thing was aware that she didn't know the story at all, and she hadn't heard of it, and she, I, as somebody who is, you know, 20 years older, had been, you know, delivered workshops on Black history and who knew people that were physically there, I still didn't know the causes. I still didn't know what had gone before, and a lot of the people that were there on the day didn't know exactly why it was there and why it had happened. But the more these webs of contact are spread, the more we tie these things together, and the more importance we put on each of these significant individuals, these significant events, the more we start to realise that there are connections, there are webs, there are things going back further. As Liz says, I'm, as a 4-year-old in 1977, I don't know. I wasn't at the moonshot in 72. It would have been hard. I wasn't born. So knowing about these things and making these contacts happen and these little bits of history, the idea of a Black British person in the 20th century feeling that the need to have a passport, I'm going to call it a passport because that's effectively what it is. It was a document that gave you right to enter the central London in the 1970s. is something that most of our young people are, and I can fit into young on this occasion, I don't often anymore, but I'm young enough to not be aware of that as a concept.
It's interesting as well that in 81, on the Black People's Day of Action, the demo passes pretty much unmolested until Blackfriars Bridge. Mm-hmm. And as it tries to cross into the city, that's where the police attack it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, you know, there's that demarcation that they weren't bothered about it until it wanted to go across the bridge, until it wanted to go into the city. And that's another, it's mapping again, it's an unconscious barrier.
In my childhood, the demonstrations that were happening, and they were mainly anti-apartheid demonstrations, the Metropolitan Police were the ones that I thought we had the worst relationship with, because the City of London Police were saying things like, oh, we're handing you over to the animals now. This actually happened at a demonstration that I must have been about 10, an anti-apartheid demonstration, and they were talking really negatively about the Metropolitan Police, as they were the ones with the issues. But if you're talking about this happening in... as you're going over the bridges, then this is the City of London Police that would,
Well, I can honestly say we didn't really see those nuances, mate. They were just the police.
this is them seeing. Yeah,
they were changing uniform. We didn't even know.
And there was a lot of City Police at the Battle of Lewisham. Right. A lot of the police officers that day were City of London Police, because they were busted in. Because they were,
there was a camp, wasn't there, on Hilly Fields. The idea
of... Everyone was bussing in, weren't they?
Yeah, the police were busting for this. The left were busting for this. I mean, we had Attila the stockbroker come up, and he you know, they were on a bus up from Brighton. There were banners on in those pictures at the top of Clifton Rise. Yeah. You can see all these banners of left wing organisations. Everybody was busting. To concentrate in that crucible there, making these connections is vital, I don't know if everybody realizes, but each time we're sharing these things, people are hearing stuff for the first time,
I'm just wondering, what can Rocky Society do to allow this to continue? What should we be doing? Because, I mean, you were saying, John, that you're sort of setting up a website where you're going to be doing things. Did you say stage 2?
Yes, all there. I mean, the website's there. We're just working with the education. All the infrastructure, all the website infrastructure is there, all the history, all
What's
the exhibition.
The name of the website?
You can find it if you just Google Goldsmiths Battle of Lewisham, you'll find it through that.
There.
Yeah, really? Goldsmiths Battle of Lewisham, you'll find it. Mm-hmm. It sits under the History Department pages, so again, you can go in through the History Department.
So it's the main Goldsmiths website, it's just a section.
Yeah. Within that, a set of web pages, and one of those is educational resources.
Are you going
resources.
To do any short courses?
We do a Black British History short course, and that's going to be expanded into the MA programme, but it'll still continue to run.
They're very expensive, aren't they?
So this one is £150 for... seven, I think it's 7 or 8 weeks. That's Elizabeth Williams. Liz Williams.
Liz is wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, well, Liz Williams works on all sorts of stuff. But, South African, again, anti-apartheid history, but just, you know, is a very, very... I mean, she works in... She's our subject librarian, but she has a PhD in history. And we are trying to lure her into the history department to head up our new Black British History.
this is just possibly. I've not spoken to Mikhail, I've not spoken to you, but just hearing that you've got this platform, I'm not sure what key stage two, what that age range is. So would your film be suitable for 11? Could there be a collaboration?
Well, I think it's suitable for any age, because they need to know.
Could there be a collaboration where you put your... Maybe there needs to be a conversation between you two where you can...
There is nothing wrong with that resource. As speaking as a teacher, there's nothing wrong with that resource for. I mean, it probably is minimally accessible for Key Stage 1 because some of the ideas and concepts. But beyond Key Stage 1, which is above the age of 7, there's nothing in there. It's difficult subjects to cover, and it would require differentiation in order to be effective. But there's nothing in there that should prevent it from being used among above the...
And it becomes a teaching resource. The teacher facilitates it in a way that, as you say, differentiates it for different...
And it's just... in the national curriculum. Yeah. It's in the national curriculum. Yeah. You teach people... In the national curriculum, it says every school child, I'm paraphrased, should be taught the folkways, mores, cultures, histories of their particular groups, mm-hmm. their cultural and ethnic so-called racial groups. It's in the national curriculum. Yes. I always say that when I go to schools and they say, Ashakud. I remember when my daughters were doing, my last two girls, when they were doing Egypt, and because I'd been to Egypt in 1992 and we had slides then, old school, we had slides, and I took loads of slides. And when they came home with their very white-looking Egypt stuff, I wrote a letter to the school, and I just said to the teacher, I've got some slides, I just got back from Egypt, this was 1992, would you like to see the slides? I sent the slides, and so obviously I'm giving them from an African-centered perspective of Egypt, because that's the tour that I did. And I sent the slides, maybe about 30 slides to the school, and this is no word of a lie, my wife's out there, she will tell you, I received about 28 drawings because I had to do a drawing. And nearly everyone had them. I had short dreads then. I was either on a camel, standing in front of a pyramid. It changed their whole notion of what it was, because then they were allowed in a practical sense. And we were talking about praxis outside. We were having a laugh with Laura about praxis. But that is what praxis is. It's not just the practice of it, it's putting the documentation in there, it's making it live. So as an educator, if you deal with praxis, it's more than practical. You're putting yourself in there. Because they could see there was a black presence in there, they could put me in the picture. And this is what they did. And we're talking, I don't know, 1996, 1997, something like that, I did that. That's and for me, that's what it is. You make the presence known by involving it.
Mm-hmm. That's why the within film works.
You embed it, absolutely.
Because there's people, they even if they don't understand what the people are saying, or they can't, they can see on the screen people of colour talking about these things.
Absolutely.
And that will go in. Yes, and if that's mediated in the right way.
They need to see Nichelle, they need to see, as a filmmaker, they need to see Liz as an academic. They need to see, I mean, I go and do workshops about poetry, and the fact that I have a book. Oh, you've written a book?
And it
literally seeing somebody, I do supply teaching in schools as well, and sometimes I've met people over a long period of time before they realise there's a book. Oh, you've written a book. Yeah. And a lot of these things are literally, it is just about physically showing people that things can be different. There's a relatively young poet, she's been a poet for about 10 years, who when I was very first doing supply, went in and I covered a PE lesson, and I have a poem that I used to introduce myself at the start of lessons. And it was the first, she was already writing, and she'd already seen black American writers, but she'd never seen a black British person performing poetry. And she said it just made me feel like it was something that I could do. I didn't see her again for 10 years, so she didn't, and I didn't get to hear this story. But people,
I was just thinking, when you're talking about that, some of their parents may have had some contact previously with poets like Benjamin Zephaniah, or I'm sure you all remember Linton Kwesi Johnson.
They're still around. I saw him last week.
So it's a good. They were very well known, and of course Alice Walker, who really turned me on when I read her novels at that time, in the late early 80s and late 70s. So, and that, I think once those things are there, they were published by these Women's Press, I think, you remember?
Spare Ribbon things.
Yes, all of those as well. I think that makes a historical connection between the generations then.
Yep.
And all this stuff needs to be reaffirmed. Does it needs to come back? And all of those images, again, in the media, so going into television is a marvellous way of absorbing it again. So it's ready to make change.
I mean, this is great. We are so. This is exactly what we wanted, which we didn't have last year. I'm just about to get some feedback forms, but I'm aware that our wonderful speakers have been speaking for a long time. But I'm going to get some feedback forms. If you can note down what you think we should be doing next, do you know what I mean? That would be really, really good. But be mindful now that it is lunchtime. All speakers have got lunch for free, so just make sure you just go up. And I don't know if people have got their lunch tickets, but if you can start winding down, I'll just go and get some feedback forms. Maybe the next 5 minutes, we'll call it quits.
Yeah, I mean, but there is still some resistance, though, even in schools, supposedly progressive. I've been in schools where people are saying, you know, do we still need Black History Month? Do we still, you know, not even what we have, you don't need Black History Month if you're going to include more stuff, but what they mean is... I know what you mean, but what they're actually saying is not we're going to include it elsewhere. They just mean we're not going to make such an effort to include it full stop. And there is actually, because, and I think it's partly to do with people being bored. It's partly to do with what you were saying of the same stories being wheeled out. But there is a sense that they don't want to tell any... It's like, if we can't find any new stories, then we don't really need to tell those stories because those stories have been told. But there are certainly stories...
The other thing as well is the story, and what strikes me, and I don't quite know where we are yet, but you're saying that it gets to a point where we've had this with class. There was a time when history was predominantly written by the upper classes for the upper classes. Mm-hmm. And then we had the history workshop movement, and we had the drive to get more... working class people into history. Then we had more working class people doing history, and now we have working class people as academics that other working class people can look up to and go, they did it, they published books, they're an academic, I could do that. It's happened with gender. We went through the same process with gender, that there was a time when the history was all men, and then there was a sense that women were there too, so you put women into it, and then the feminist agenda drives it forward that women are the drivers of history. Then you move to gender history, where you, and then again, young women can see successful women in academia, and I don't know quite what point we're at with race in that sense.
Because race is off the agenda.
It's much more dangerous.
Race is off the agenda. Yeah.
There's retribution of some sort. There's definitely the monetary gap, because the man goes around and says that the banks owe lots of money into reparation. There's something that even people who are Black British sort of veer away from.
But I think that those things were that class was dangerous when it was being done. You know, class was feared at a time when the history workshop movement in the 60s and 70s was trying to get more working class history into the curriculum and just get people to recognise it. The jury was out on the communism capitalism thing. You know, there was a sense that this was an agenda that was driving. So it was threatening, but eventually it got depoliticised. It's just what Mark was saying about, and what Les has been saying about, having people you can look to and go, you know, this, I can see a pathway for me to get to there. And that's, you know, it's not that everybody will become an academic, but now it's not as unusual to find someone with a working class background who's the first person in university to go to, first in the family to go to university, getting to be a professor. And talking with their accent, you know. I don't put on anything when I lecture. This is how I sound. And this is how I talk when I lecture to people. Yeah. When I talk to my students, I talk like this. I don't talk any other way because I don't know any other way to talk.
That's right.
And that's my background. And they know that's my background. They know that I've come through from, you know, that nobody in my family went to university. And I'm not a professor, but, you know, maybe one day. But, you know, even to be an academic...
You'll be there soon.
Even an academic, it still surprises them slightly.
Yeah.
But you've got to have those role models, and I just wonder what... If there is a cycle of this, whether it is visibility, activism, kind of immersion, and then integration, what point Black History is at that? I think we're still at the activism stage. I think we're still at the stage where people are having to fight to get it recognised, to get it written, to get it into the curriculum.
And I'm from West London. I'm bussed in, and I'm sat in because it's riveting to hear you discuss things, and you're a much wider cross group. But very clearly, we had the carnival as a conduit or something.
Yeah.
And the carnival has worked quite well with teachers who want to take it up. But it's so much more than just the beads and the dance. Mm. And the people who are active carnival artists weep from the thing of how it just gets taken into the media by who's doing the most beady type of thing.
Yeah.
So the recent thing of Grenville has been, it's only one stop away from where I live, and so we heard the noise and we know the ripple and we know who got there first and tried to help, and we also know where that's going, and that's big enough to sort of vanish and be taken over and be bought and so on. Because it's not really on the cards that you're looking for a perfect balance or justice or something like that. People are not that committed to it. Yes, you know, there's Westfield is right there trying to get in front of the whole thing.
It's all part of the same.
And what's happened with Grenville is really intriguing that it's over the same area as where we did the costumes was in one of St Clement's school, and there's an enormous amount of overlap between the people who have understood that there was an outrage started the carnival, but most people have forgotten. And the thing with the housing now is the drive behind the housing, that's got to be captured in some way and made into a science and not just allowed to be an event sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because all my life, I hasten to add, I'm 80, and therefore I'm in lots of threads which I have seen kind of start and be very promising, particularly among poets, young poets. But I think you have to have a basis, like a university, and you have to have some science, and it has to be nailed that these are the stages.
Again, as I discovered, which I didn't know when I watched the film the young historians had made,
that
Ladbroke Grove was the centre of the British Black Liberation Movement. They grew, you know, that was one of their, I mean, I knew about the mangrove, and I knew about the carnival and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, they were interviewing people who said, it all came out. The British leg of the Black Liberation Front based itself in West London, in Ladbroke Grove.
And that was because that's where the nastiest events were.
Yeah, in that Hill. 58. Kelso Cochrane, 59.
Yep.
Yeah. Right, I'm going to have to...
Well,